You're listening to the Jonesy's Jukebox on Indie 1031.
Yeah, I can hear it.
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
And we're here with Richard Howe. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Jonesy.
How are you?
I'm good.
What was it you just said, something made me laugh?
Well, I don't know about that.
You said something that, for the hell of it, I brought these CDs in. I thought that was funny.
You nailed me.
So
you were asking me about whether I came out to L.A.
If you come to L.A. much, yeah.
And I don't.
When was the last time you was here then?
I think it was the last time I had a book come out, which was 3 or 4 years ago. Same thing coming out here because of the book. But it's interesting that way because it means that every time I come here, it all looks different to me, you know, because I've changed in that time. Like, I'm really into it, this trip. I mean, usually I resist it.
I can't see you moving out here. I
kind of would like to.
I just imagine you living upstairs from CBGBs or something.
Ooh. I'm not that grim.
No, I know. I heard that they're tearing it down again. They kind of want it back and they're tearing it down.
You know, I don't know what the situation is. I think it's hopeless. You know, I mean, because basically Hilly's at the mercy of his landlord. But... you know, I guess maybe its time is over. I mean, if Hilly could subsidize it himself if he really wanted to. I mean, he makes enough off of T-shirts to pay the rent.
No, that's all you see is them bleeding CBS.
I know.
CBS. CBGB T-shirt. Everywhere, every kid from 5 years to about 25 wears a CBS.
And they're so ugly. There's nothing at all appealing just strictly to look at about those T-shirts. I mean, it's really some kind of lesson there, you know.
Well, it just has that myth of it's something cool because it was a cool place to play, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, see, of course, CBGB's itself is pretty ugly. Yeah.
It's a dump. It stinks of booze, and that is like the epitome of clubs. It makes me not want to go on the road ever again.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I mean, that's what drove me out of rock and roll, for sure.
When did
was
you
those smelly clubs. And
when did you stop playing?
Well, really, it was 1984.
Wow.
Really. I think I maybe did a couple of dates in 85. You know. So what's that? 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
You're just not interested in playing.
Well,
you obviously like music, but you're not interested in playing.
Yeah, I like making records, you know, but I don't like the life. I did it for 10 years.
Yeah.
74 to 84.
Right.
And I just got burned out. And, I mean, it hadn't improved any. In fact, it just got worse. I mean, as far as, you know, my fate as a musician, it would have to have been, you know, trudging through... grimy club after grimy club, you know how. And plus, it's so it's physically wearing in a lot of other ways too.
Yeah.
Not to mention mentally wearing. Not to mention metaphysically wearing. I don't know what that means.
It sounds good.
It's totally wearing.
Oh yeah, metaphysically. Yeah. It's okay if you're doing it like on a big level. Like if you're flying in a private plane and you're staying at Four Seasons, it's a lot better.
Well, yeah, it's better. But even then, man, I don't think I had the temperament for it.
I don't like traveling, to be honest with you.
I like traveling, but I like traveling alone in a car from motel to motel on my own schedule.
Right.
Which is what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Is, you know,
well, that's fun.
Really a total pleasure.
I mean, what I mean is I don't like flying around. I don't like flying.
Right. And I happen to be, you know... escorted from, you know, post to post. It's completely boring. I mean, and then in music, everybody treats you like a moron.
Yeah.
Too, you know, nobody has any respect for musicians. You're always, so you're always angry and you're always fighting with people. And usually, you have to stay high to deal with it. It's nasty.
It's better than digging ditches, though.
Yeah, that it is, I suppose. Except, you know, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. I mean,
you don't have to get up at 7 in the morning.
It kills a lot of people, though. I mean...
What, digging ditches?
No, playing music.
Playing music. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It does, but, you know. don't you find, though, the older you get, like the law of averages, that a lot of people die early anyway, in all walks of life?
I don't know. I've often wished that somebody would do some kind of statistical study,
yeah,
to see if they could figure out what the, you know, fatality rate for musicians is. Because it does seem to me like it's higher than normal.
Yeah, but like I say, I think you think there's more musicians die than just say like lawyers.
Yeah, I do.
Or actors, or
yeah, yeah, because it's built into music that it's self-destructive. You know, I mean, well, because you're supposed to be going at full speed all the time, and people encourage you. You know, it's like there's a whole huge stream of rock and roll that's just about being a moron and getting paid for it, mm-hmm, right? a self-destructive moron getting paid for it. And, you know, I can respect that. Yeah. I mean, morons have the right to their moment in the sun, you know? but it does tend to waste you, right? I mean, you would see, like, you know, I mean, you sure saw that in Sid. You know, everybody was encouraging him to be as self-destructive and stupid as he possibly could be.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Johnny Thunders. And Johnny, you would see him walking around perfectly capable and stable and, you know, relatively, you know, reasonably straight.
He wasn't a dummy when he was straight, was he?
No.
He was an intelligent bloke.
But when he hit the stage,
yeah,
his eyelids would start drooping. He'd right. start staggering around. He'd start slurring his words, and he'd start insulting everybody. I mean, half the time, that was because he was extremely f***ed up. But, you know, if he wasn't, he would pretend to be, because that's what people wanted from him. And that's really pervasive.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Sorry about the word.
You was in the Heartbreakers originally, right? Didn't you guys form the Heartbreakers, you and Funders?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Didn't do many shows on it? You
played a year. I did a whole year of it. I did as long as I was in the Heartbreakers, for as long as I was in television. Yeah, I was basically, you know, I was basically the singer. I mean, and it was a great time. I really liked it. I was happy back in like 1975.
Did you record anything?
Nothing for release.
Yeah,
we did some really nice demos that have been lost, but you know they show up in pirate versions,
right?
And these really bad dubs, you know, like 10 generations removed from the original tapes, from the kind of thing.
Yeah, sound awful.
One of those is cleaned up as well as we could clean it up. Is on Spurts. Chinese Rocks, the original version of Chinese Rocks. That's from those
studio
sessions, yeah.
Oh,
but it's like, you know,
not
I mean,
good.
We did everything we could to, you know, perk it up and make it shine, but it's still, it's probably technically the worst sounding thing on there, but it sounds all right.
What's your book about? What book you got out?
Oh, yeah. The book is called Godlike. And it's
is it about me?
you better watch out, or I'll tell people it is, man. And you'll never, your reputation will never recover. this is my biography of Steve Jones.
Godlike.
And
what is it about, though?
And homosexual.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind. Sling it all in there.
Yeah. Because the book is about poets, mm-hmm. But the poets that meant something to me when I was a kid, who were really out of the gutter, but at the same time really serious about writing, and writing really was what motivated them and the most important thing to them, but they weren't, you know, they weren't academics, they weren't sort of pompous, pretentious kind of people. They were street people who just loved writing. Set in New York in the early 70s. And it's... excuse me. Sorry. And it uses it, it because I didn't. I knew I wanted to write about that time and place and those types of people, but I didn't know what to use to have some kind of plot or story to it. I used the love affair of Rambo and Verlaine, set in 1970s New York.
Sylvester Stallone. Rambo.
Yeah, and Tom Verlaine.
And Tom
Verlaine. You didn't know about those two, right?
They're homosexuals. I always knew it's so funny.
They really, they.
I always thought.
It's a little known fact, but I tell all in this book, man.
Oh, funny. That is funny. Was he a buddy of yours, Tom Verlaine, from school?
Yeah.
You went to school together?
Yeah, we went to school together, yeah.
Do you still speak to him?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's always some occasion to speak every year. You know, we don't hang out. But, we'll go have a cup of coffee or something.
What did you do in New York? Did you stay at home a lot writing? Or
did you go out? Yeah, I'm really like a secluded
hermit.
Yeah. I don't really go out much. You know, yeah.
You married again?
I'm married, happily married. We got married 3 years ago. But we'd been together for 6 years before that.
Patty Smythe came on my show.
Oh, no.
Came on, when was that? A couple of months ago?
Really?
Was it with your daughter?
She came on with Ruby?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure.
No kidding?
And John McEnroe came on too, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How old is Ruby?
20.
Oh, no.
No.
No,
it was a different kid. Yeah, Ruby's 20.
Yeah.
And it's true. We were married for a year back in 1985, yeah. I mean, what I usually say is... I'd just gotten clean, so I didn't have any judgment.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice way of saying that. how long have you been clean?
I don't like to talk about that.
Yeah, me neither. Don't ever ask me that question again. We're going to visit the Duke. We are here with Richard L, and we'll be right back after these wonderful messages. Thanks for listening.
Well, you know you took my...
You're listening to Jonesy's Jukebox on Indie 103.1 with Richard Hell, my new best friend, in the studio. That was Mary Wells. This was your choice, right?
Yeah, that's one of the CDs I brought. That's one of the CDs I brought to play in the car because I've just been driving for the last 2 weeks.
You've driven from New York, kind of.
No. They rented me a car. They flew me out to Seattle to start. Right. It's just to promote the book.
Right.
I'm reading, giving readings in four or five cities on the West Coast. Right.
Right.
This is the last stop. I'm reading tonight at Book Soup.
Yeah, you're doing a signing there.
Yeah. Or I'm reading for a little while and signing books. Yeah, at Book Soup.
So is that what you're really into then? Is like writing books. How many books have you written?
Well, it depends on how you count, but
fingers.
I use my boogers. Three major ones, really. You know, lots of little odds and ends, but yeah. There was a novel in '96 called Go Now, which was a road book. I'm into the driving. And then the book I wanted to bring to you today, but I forgot. But I'll get your address and I'll send it to you. That has a book called Hot and Cold, which was the last thing that brought me out here, like 4 or 5 years ago, because I gave a couple of readings around that.
What's that about?
It collects all these odds and ends of stuff that I'd written over the years. It has all my lyrics in it. It has. A bunch of poems. It has even drawings. There's a naked picture of me. No comment. See,
with you and Tom Verlaine. Is Tom Verlaine with you?
No, it's just me alone in the Italian woods. I really only like to be alone when I'm naked.
In the Italian woods?
Yeah.
What was you doing out there?
That's another story.
Looking for some Italian men? Did you have a hanky?
No, I was having sex with the trees, man. There was this one tree that had this cavity in it at exactly the right position, and I was a little nervous, but it was exhilarating. anyway, so there's that book has an essay that I wrote about the Sex Pistols in it. So I wanted to give that to you, but.
What do you say about the Sex Pistols?
I give you your props.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not a dig then.
No.
Did you ever see
the contrary? I was the only guy who there's all this rivalry between New York and London. Right?
Yeah, I don't know why, but.
But I thought that was stupid. I don't believe in that kind of gang mentality about music, you know. All those guys actually underneath recognize how perfect the Sex Pistols were.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't acknowledge it because it would be like some kind of loss of pride or something
that.
But because really, finally, it's all luck, man.
Right.
You were very lucky.
Yeah.
You know, everything fell into place perfectly.
It did.
Yeah.
I agree.
And but it did. It was perfect. They were perfect. You guys were perfect for like, you know, whatever it was there, 18 months.
Not long.
Yeah.
76 to 78, pretty much.
Right.
You know.
I did have some differences with you. But anyway.
Please, that's not the tell. what was your main thing? Just tell me. It's all right.
Well, that whole issue of how you guys cop from New York.
The fashion. Look, he's swearing again. Look.
That
the look?
You would never acknowledge.
Like the look?
Well, the look, but also there was in the air this sort of the values of music, the musical values, you know, whether it was the Dolls or the Ramones or other New York groups that had already put this stuff in motion.
I always give credit to the New York Dolls. That's how I learned to play guitar.
Right.
Was to the first Dolls album and the Stooges' Raw Power album. That's how I used to take speed and play over and over again to the first Dolls album and that album.
Right.
That's
exactly the same for me, except for the speed part.
Yeah.
I used dope. But the... I mean, and you can hear that on the early stuff on that Spurt CD, you know. I mean, the Dolls and the Stooges and a little bit of Dylan in yeah. my background.
Yeah.
And also the really crazed 1964, 65 Rolling Stones, that stuff. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. See, it all starts...
And the Who.
From miles back.
Yeah.
It didn't start in New York or in London.
Yeah, sure.
It started a thousand years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
But everyone wants to take credit for it. And I'm never going to do any of them punk documentaries ever again. Because it gets so boring. It's all that piddly cat
fighting. But everybody's just trying to protect their turf, and everybody's just trying to serve their own interests when they do that stuff. And yeah, so I feel the same way. I didn't do that Don Letts one.
I know. I didn't want to do it, but you don't want to know the truth why I did it. When my show first started, I had a hard time getting guests in, and I used to get them in on a Friday. And Don Letts called me on a Wednesday and said, would you do this thing? I said, what's it about? He's like, punk, you know. But it's different. It's a different way. I'm like, yeah, right. It's going to be the same old stuff. And I said, no, I'm sorry, Don, but I'm not doing it. And then Friday came, and I had a guy in here that I was going to have in, and he cancelled. And I panicked. So I called Don Letts up. I said, all right, I'll do your thing as long as you come in here and be my guest. And that's how it came about.
Right, right.
But I didn't want to do it.
Yeah, well, the other thing about doing those is, and the reason I'm really, like, you know, hesitant, you know, is that they put you in their context, you
right,
know. Why
right.
should you turn over your life story to have somebody else, you know, place it in some context you have no control over and you can't even anticipate what it's going to be, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, you got to trust somebody to... you know, actually, when they first called me up from the Don Letts thing,
yeah.
It was a week after the after 9/11 in New York.
Right,
they come to New York, and the city still stank of burning concrete, and they wanted me to go down to a studio and reminisce about punk music
about you know? CBGBs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of
exactly nice. Exactly. Yeah. But you know, I think it's better. I think you speak louder if you don't do them stupid little documentaries.
Yeah. Well, it all comes out in the wash, is the way I felt about it. I mean,
yeah.
Because back then at that time, I did have some resentment about London. You know, when we went and did a tour with the Clash, and because I felt like all those bands were presenting themselves as being so honest, while at the same time. I knew, and they knew, that they had appropriated a lot of stuff from New York.
Right.
And that was kind of... But I knew at that time it would all eventually, you know, the facts would surface, and, who cares? I mean, things take care of themselves. You know, you can't be, you know, micromanaging.
But it's the same in England. You know, like the Clash and the Pistols, sometimes we would argue with each other. You know, or the Jam or the Damned,
right.
You know, everyone would be envious. We weren't all together,
right?
You know,
right.
It's the same.
It's funny, man, because at CBGB's, there was for a while there in 74, 75, there was this kind of sense of common mission. And it's, you know, we all had certain things, it felt like to me anyway, that we hoped to change about the way things were being done, you know. We wanted to make music more true to life, basically, is what it came down to. You know, to have it come out of what people's lives were really like. You know, talk about what was going on. But the moment the bands started succeeding, everybody just went their separate ways.
Yeah.
You know,
and of course.
Yeah,
greed.
It's not even just greed, but it's like natural. You know, it's just like the way things develop, right? You know what I mean? You start having to be out of town all the time, you know, so you don't have... But during 74, 75, everybody was in the same room every night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a whole different situation.
Yeah.
And, you know,
show me the money.
But yeah, but bands usually don't have more than a 2-3 year career anyway, right? I mean, that's part of what's depressing about...
What, like the Rolling Stones, you mean? Have you heard their new album?
Yes.
I guess you don't like it then.
Yeah, I mean, it got such play. I mean, people were, I mean, the hype about it was really strong. But yeah. I mean, maybe I could adjust to it. So I went out and bought it for the first time. I bought a Stones album in probably 8 or 9 years, and it seemed really tired to me.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't really given it a chance.
Yeah, I don't mind it. What do you think, Shovel? Do you like it?
I like a lot of it.
Yeah. I like it because it sounds like it's gone back a bit. I didn't like a bunch of their albums that they've done recently, but I thought that one was more back on track. It ain't Let It Bleed, that's for sure. Yeah. But it's pretty good. I was surprised. I was nicely surprised. Are you still passionate about music?
Well, I listen to it all the time. I mean,
is there any new bands you like?
I don't believe in passion.
You don't?
No. Other bands I like?
You like any new bands?
You know who I like? It's like so obvious that it's embarrassing, but I really like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Yeah, they're good.
I like them a lot. I liked that moment that happened like a couple of years ago that might still be going on, but I don't really keep up, you know. I'm not like cutting edge following what's just being released and everything, but I like those garage bands that, you know, when like the Mooney Suzuki's and the Hives and because that's the kind of music Hives. I love. I'm into that music. I like that kind of
garage.
I like that just kind of that style,
rough around the edges,
and just really driving, you know, really just completely driving, so it just takes you, carries you, you know.
Was you a fan of the Sonics?
Yeah, sure.
Because that
they're Seattle, right?
Yeah, that was the original. No, not the band.
Yeah,
that.
They're from Seattle, aren't they?
The Sonics.
Yeah,
they have that one. Have Love Will Travel, right? That's the Sonics. Yeah. Where am I going with this?
A lot of those like early garage bands came. The Kingsmen came from Seattle too, I think, didn't they?
I don't know.
I think so. Yeah, that's like.
What are we doing?
Because you're a limey.
I know. Do you know where that word came from?
Yes, I do.
Tell me.
Scurvy, man.
That's it.
Yeah.
Where did Yanks come from?
That's a good question. Maybe it was that Yankee Doodle was a song.
That's
in the
that sounds good.
Like Revolutionary War.
That sounds good. Yeah. That sounds good. I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy.
Hey, man.
See?
How'd you do that? Wow. Well, that sounds like Rudy Valley.
Without moving my lips. We're going to visit the Duke. We're here with Richard L. And we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for listening. We're trying to decide what song we're going to play off your new.
Why don't you play the first one?
What is it?
It's the original Neon Boys, Love Comes in Spurs. It's nothing like the different words, different tune. It only has that title.
Is there profanity on it, Richard?
No.
It's not. It's clean.
Unless you object to Spurs.
Not Spurs, no.
No,
that's good. Now, this has just come out on Rhino, right? What's the cover, Shovel? This is the Richard Hell story.
Called Spurts. It's called Spurts.
Right.
Right.
And this is...
And what that is, it's kind of a best of, but the way I really look at it is the few CDs that I've made before, I had problems with something about every one of them, and I wanted to make one CD that was the best CD was possible to compile from everything I'd ever done. So I actually think of that as my only CD, and the other ones are like just bootlegs from the Spurts sessions.
Do you think you'll ever move out here to LA?
You know, I've always wanted to spend a year or two here to see if I get a handle on it, but I don't really have any plans to.
Do you like getting suntanned? You look pretty
tan. Not anymore.
You look pretty tan though right now.
Yeah, well, I've been walking around out in the sun. Yeah.
Do you like to walk around? Do you own a car?
Not anymore. I just sold it like a year ago. So
you don't need it in New York, do you? Really?
Yeah, but I was using it to do a lot of driving out of New York, but then I stopped being able to do that because.
Do you have a place outside of New York?
No, not yet. That's
is that
top
your goal?
Priority, yeah.
You're kind of tired of.
Well, I love being out in the woods. I really like being out in the woods.
Naked. trees with cavities.
Yeah, I tell you, we already covered that ground.
Cavities. Should be a dentist for trees.
No, man. You just have to butter up the cavities.
Yeah. Get some sap in there. Excellent. There's a whole bunch of people who hug trees, though, isn't there? No, there are.
I hear tell. What do they look like?
Well, they wear Birkenstocks,
right?
And they got long hair, and the birds have armpits, hairy armpits, and they go around hugging trees.
But do you think they actually like do it to orgasm?
No, they're just trying to get power from loving nature. You know,
that's not what I'm talking about.
I know what you're on about. You're a sick man. You are. You like to get naked and
no, I don't really. I don't really
look
don't
for cavities.
No, it was just like it was an aberration. It was just that one time.
Okay.
In Italy,
I love Italy.
Yeah, me too.
In the country.
It was in Capri, actually.
Yeah, them roads, aren't they awesome?
The mountains, the roads in Italy. Yeah.
There's some good driving around there.
Yeah.
Always remind me.
I haven't done that.
You've got to do that.
Not really.
Yeah. Always remind me of like James Bond movies. Them roads there, you know, and them mountains.
And Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Aston Martin.
There you go. With the machine gun that comes out the headlights. So we'll play this song. What one are we going to play? Like, this is a different version.
It's like the Neon Boys is called. It's me and Verlaine and Billy Ficker in 1973. It's actually done on a four track. It's the first time I was ever in the studio. It's like the second song I ever wrote. And we just like a demo that we made. Tom plays both guitars. So it's crude in a way, but you know it I don't know. It's got
Didn't you have a black guy in your band?
Did in the Boydoys, yeah.
Yeah.
Ivan.
What's he doing now?
He worked with me on this. He did the mastering. We did it in his studio. He has a studio in Brooklyn called Gatlian. And we worked together real hard on, I remixed a lot of stuff on here, and it's all remastered.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you here.
It's been great.
You're doing your book signing tonight at Book Soup.
7 o'clock at Book Soup. Yeah.
7 o'clock. And you're gonna be spouting off some stuff out of it.
I'll be reading for 15, 20 minutes, you know, and talking a little bit. I think I'll also take questions from the audience.
How's that been going across America? Do a lot of people show up?
It's been really gratifying, you know. I mean, it's gone real well. It's not like a mosh pit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's...
Have you got a book for me? Did you bring one for Mr. Jones?
I have the previous one. How about that one? Go Now.
Okay, Go Now.
Yeah.
Oh, look
I don't have the new one. The only new one I have is the one that has all my notes in it.
Can I have this one?
Yeah.
Will you sign this for me?
Yeah, sure.
You're very kind. Kind man. Okay. It's been a pleasure having you. I'll be back tomorrow at 12 Bells. We're going to go out with Richard Hell's album, The Richard Hell Story, which is on Rhino. It's called Spurts, and he's signing books tonight at 6, did you say, or 7?
It's 7.
7 o'clock tonight at Book Soup, which is across the street from Tower Records, right? I think
it is. Is that right? It's on the strip.
Yeah, it's across the street from Tower Records. See you all tomorrow at 12 Bells. Bye-bye.